So I hope you are well and settling in. It's been now almost 24 hours since you began arriving here, and it does take time. It takes time to settle, for the mind to settle. So I encourage you to be patient and yeah, and just begin again, begin again. So I'd like to share a few thoughts about gratitude and generosity. We've talked a bit about gratitude, reflecting a little bit on what we're grateful for, and I'd like to open that up even a little bit more. And to me, gratitude is very connected to generosity. I think that gratitude, in a way, lays the groundwork for generosity. So what is gratitude? When we say I'm grateful for something, maybe we can unpack it a little bit and explore what does that mean? I think that gratitude is a kind of presence, a quality of presence. When we are grateful, we're noticing something in the present moment and appreciating it and recognizing the benefit that we are receiving. We're noticing the blessings that are there for us, and it's actually a way that we open up to what is coming in, what we are, how life, which includes other people and the beauty of nature, and the food that we're eating, and the water, and the lake, all of these things, how they enrich and bless our lives. So it's taking that in. Gratitude affirms. Opening to gratitude, so intentionally bringing an intention to say, what am I grateful for right now? What's evoking gratitude right now for me? And it brings us into a kind of an inquiry as to who we are in this moment, and what and who are we in relationship with. So the inquiry of gratitude brings us beyond it, kind of moves through and maybe dissolves or breaks through to a certain extent that sense of solidity and separateness of self. When I bring attention to gratitude, I'm bringing attention to what supports my life, what nourishes us, and it removes our attention from what we lack. So we often spend a lot of time thinking about what we don't have, or what we didn't have, or what we didn't get. So when we cultivate an attitude of gratitude, we are shifting that. And that sense of lack, that sense of deprivation, that sense of, I didn't have a good family, I didn't grow up with loving parents or whatever it is, or we didn't have enough. I wasn't able to do this or that, do sports, or because there wasn't enough money or whatever it is that we may be holding as resentment or as a sense of deprivation in our lives, that can become very entrenched in the mind, and it can blind us and prevent us from seeing what is blooming and what is present in our lives right now. So it's not an avoidance. It's not saying, well, you know, everything was great when I was growing up and we didn't have, you know, my family was, you know, oh, it wasn't so bad, you know. No, it's not negating that maybe there was a lot, perhaps, that was, you know, not helpful, not supportive, not nourishing to you, to me, in our lives as children or as at whatever time that we may feel that we didn't receive what we needed. So it doesn't negate that. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't attend to those feelings and honor even that child or that young person or that adult who didn't receive what they needed and bring compassion and healing in whatever modalities we might want to explore. It's a gathering. It's a really a gathering and a reminding ourselves that we are a part of life. We do belong. We are nourished. And we have been all along. And so, you know, acknowledging that we are supported by life. Gratitude brings us into a sense of the wholeness. So it's not discriminating that, you know, this was good, this was bad. But there's a sense of that life itself in its wholeness is good. It brings us into presence with the beauty and the joy and what is alive for us right now in our lives. And we can even develop gratitude for the painful experiences in our lives. That's a step further. But I have deeply understood that the pain and the suffering that have been part of my life have softened my heart, have enabled me to connect with the suffering of others, to really care, to really want to be a helpful presence to those who are suffering. And so when we connect with our own suffering and really accept it and recognize that we may have even developed as a human being deeper dimensions of being because of that suffering, as a result of that suffering, it can, in a way, be a source of gratitude. It can awaken gratitude. So we can learn to deeply love and befriend ourselves in those in remembering those painful times or in going through the painful times now, experience or open to the possibility of forgiveness, acceptance that things are things were as they were. And because of the causes and conditions that were there at the time, they couldn't be any other way. So we can realize what we have learned, how we have deepened, how we're able to empathize and have compassion because we have lived through and emerged stronger and more open-hearted from facing what is painful. There's a teaching in Tibetan Buddhism. It's one of the contemplations that's given to somebody who's beginning practice. And it's a reflection on the opportunities and blessings of precious human birth. So these are conditions that make it possible for us to receive Dharma teachings. So having a human body, not being born into a place of war, where there's war happening, or a famine, so that we're continually starving to death, or not having enough water to drink, or where there's where we're not even picked up and held as a baby. So there are human beings that experience that, and it's very, very hard for those people in those moments, in the midst of all of that, to begin a Dharma practice, to begin a path toward freedom, toward non-reactivity. I mean, when you're only faced with surviving, that's what we have to do, is to survive. So the precious human birth includes having the leisure, you know. So we may not think that we have a lot of leisure in our lives. Some of us may live very busy lives, but here we are. You know, we have the leisure to take a week to deepen in meditation, to arrive, to come home to ourselves, to attend to the heart. So that is precious. And it's said that something that's desirable and good is even more desirable when we understand how rare it is. So there are more than 7 billion people on our planet, which seems like a lot, but compared to other life forms, it's a very small number. So even just human birth, even without adding the precious, you know, blessings, opportunities, and leisure, and so on, which includes hearing the Dharma teachings. So each one of our bodies, I took this from a talk, some writing by Gil Fronsdale on this precious human birth. Gil Fronsdale is a wonderful teacher. If you're not familiar with him, he's in Redwood, California. Each one of our bodies is host to millions of microscopic living beings, including bacteria, mites, and other creatures. The totality of insects and animals that live in the sea, on land, and in the air is astronomical. And this only accounts for those creatures that live on planet Earth. Deeply contemplate how rare and precious is the opportunity to have a human form with its many abilities. Even more, human consciousness with the capacity to reflect, value, appreciate beauty, make choices, become self-aware, and with the capacity to discover our true relationship with life is unbelievably rare and precious. And we talked about, I talked about leisure time and spending all the hours of the, people spending all the hours of their day simply surviving, keeping warm, and so on. So leisure is it's a great privilege that we have, and how do we use it? So in our culture, in our capitalist culture, we're encouraged to fill up all our time with doing things, getting things, pursuing activities, and spending time simply being present with ourselves in a contemplative practice is definitely going against the stream of mainstream society. So just taking in, you know, this, you know, we are born again in each moment. Birth and death is something that is, we consider, Buddhists talk about it as a cycle of being born as a baby and aging and illness and death. But it also is something that happens moment to moment. We can see it in our meditation practice. We may be born into a drama that pops into our mind. And then if mindfulness comes and we recognize that this is self-created, the mind created, that we don't need to be sucked into that drama, that we can breathe and be present with it and just be here and be with the breath, with the body, right now. So that is being born into a precious human life. The preciousness of life is having time and circumstance to fulfill what Tsongkhapa, who was one of the great Tibetan masters in the 15th century. Tsongkhapa called our eternal longing, to experience this wholeness, to experience this deep connection, to experience this at-oneness with life. At peace with life. And this gratitude, and this engagement with what is good and present and beneficial for ourselves and others in our lives is a blessing in the world. And that brings me to generosity. How, you know, just touching back to what I talked about on the first evening, that we can be, as a community, as individuals, we can be a kind of a presence which speaks to those around us, those with whom we're in contact. One of the things that set the Buddha on his path to awakening, it's called the four heavenly messengers, and he went out from the protection and seclusion of his very luxurious life and very privileged and protected life. And he witnessed someone who was aging. He witnessed someone who was very sick, and he witnessed someone who had died, and he asked his coachman who had accompanied him when he snuck out at night on those, you know, kind of explorations. He said, is this what all human beings encounter and experience in their lives? And his coachman said, yes, it is. And then the fourth heavenly messenger was to see a stramana, a wandering mendicant, off in the distance, just walking so serenely across the field, across his field of vision, and recognizing the collectedness, the presence, the attention and care that this person embodied. And he said, that's my orientation. That's where I need to go. That's where I need to explore. And then shortly after, he set out on his 6 years of practice to awakening. So somebody in, we don't have to be, a monk or, but just the kindness, remembering the gifts that you bring, the gifts that you heard, how this can touch the heart of somebody who's really needing just to receive a simple act of kindness. I remember as, I guess I was a 9-year-old and being very, very unhappy in my home and feeling very unseen, not safe, not secure, not soothed, these kind of aspects of what forms a healthy attachment. So not having those. And I remember my third grade teacher, Mrs. Bingley, who just had this wonderful smile, and she always seemed to welcome me. And maybe she did it for everybody. I don't know. But somehow in those moments when I saw her smile at me, I felt like there I was, in the spotlight, and Miss Bingley was saying yes. So those little things, those gifts that we talked about, can be so powerful, because I think it planted a seed in me. Just asking ourselves, who has loved me just for being myself? Who in our lives, who in your life has loved you just for being yourself? And to feel the gratitude for that love, which awakens something very deep in us. So gratitude helps us to understand that life is received continually, that we are nourished and blessed each breath, each touch of the wind on our skin, each sound of the rustling of the leaves and the trees, the sound of the stream feeding into the lake, which is so lovely to hear. So with gratitude, we experience ourselves as part of the endless web of giving and receiving. And it opens us to empathy for those who may not be supported in their lives. And a grateful heart is a heart that is soft and open and wants to connect with those around us. And so this spontaneous movement of generosity to reach out, to support, to offer friendship, to offer what we have is the other side of the coin of gratitude. And it's moving into the reality of a shared world. And generosity can be healing also for us. It can be healing to how we are in relationship. So again, if we come from this deprivation mindset, and not saying that with any judgment whatsoever, it's well known by this being, I didn't have, and so to open the heart, to share with love and support, it does something, that dispels this neediness that we have something to share. We are something to share. We are a resource that our humanity, our kindness, our humor, our care, our seriousness, our dedication, whatever we bring. You know, and the comparing mind says, you know, oh, they have all these gifts and I don't. And you know, but our attention, our presence, our listening is such a gift. So there's a poem, a very short poem that is one of my favorites. It's by Hafiz, who, now I've forgotten what his Persian, and I think 12th century, but I'm not sure. And it's called With That Moon Language. It's a re-rendering of his poem. Admit something. Everyone you see, you say to them, love me. Of course, you would not do this out loud. Otherwise, someone would call the cops. Still, though, think about this. The great pull in us to connect. Why not become the one who lives with a full moon in each eye? That is always saying, with that sweet moon language, what every other eye in this world is dying to hear. I'll read it again. Admit something. Everyone you see, you say to them, love me. Of course, you do not do this out loud. Otherwise, someone would call the cops. Still, though, think about this great pull in us to connect. Why not become the one who lives with a full moon in each eye? That is always saying, with that sweet moon language, what every other eye in this world is dying to hear. So just going back to themes that I've mentioned earlier about the ethos of our society, the capitalism, industrialization, individualism, which have shaped our attitudes and our relationships that leave us feeling isolated, in competition, in comparison, feeling judged if we don't perform as well, have as much, present ourselves as with as much beauty and attractiveness as somebody else, and leaving us so out of touch with the real need of our heart to connect, to love, to be loved, to belong. It's a kind of disorientation of the mind, a disorder of the mind. Again, going back to that sense of how can we cultivate this inner coherence, inner integrity, inner alignment toward truth and kindness and connection. And gratitude leads us to feel indebted to others in a wholesome way. So, I as I arrived yesterday and I was unpacking, and then I came into the hall and I saw how Bibiana had set up everything so nicely and the boards, and she was so attentive and caring and conscientious. And I felt so grateful. I mean, and Bibiana would say, well, she might say, it's my job. It's what I'm supposed to do. I know that the care with which she did it, and I felt so grateful and supported. And so I wanted to tell her, Bibiana, thank you so much for what you did. And I'm now embarrassing her. So. So there's a mutuality of receiving, giving, and so on. It brings us into a flow in which we can learn to give freely without expecting something back. Even not expecting back recognition or even thanks. It's nice, but sometimes we give something and then we say, I didn't even say thank you. What? Is that really why we gave it? Did we give it because we wanted to help? Did we give it because we wanted to share what we had? Generosity is a skill that we can develop. So many of these beautiful qualities of heart and mind, maybe because there's a lack of teaching about cultivation, about bhavana, that we just think, oh, they're such a compassionate person, or they're such a loving person, or they're such a generous person. They must have been born that way. Who knows? Maybe there are people who are born with a kind of sensitivity and perception that make it easier for them. Maybe the early, months and years of their lives were also supportive to those qualities. We can cultivate these qualities, and they bring so much joy to us. The Buddha said that generosity gives joy in three ways. Now, maybe I'm stealing a line from Bibiana's Dana talk. This used to be Janet's Dana talk, that at the end of the retreat, that generosity gives, when we have a thought of giving, it's usually accompanied by a feeling of, kind of a joy. That would be nice. And then the act of giving, also, if we go from the thought to the act, the act of giving is also, it's mostly joyful. sometimes, you know, if we're giving something that we're really attached to, there can be that little pull of attachment too. But mostly there's a joy in it. And then the remembering of it. I find this really to be true, that the remembering of it, you know, whatever it was that I was attached to, whether it was, you know, stuff or money or, you know, time, my time, it's gone. And it, you know, it's, and I have that memory of having given and that connection with that person that I gave to, and that brings joy. But sometimes we don't get from the generous thought to the generous action. And Joseph Goldstein talks about that. And he says, you know, he tells us, he's told several stories about like having a thought to share something and then thinking, no, I think one of it was a Dharma story. It was like something that happened, and he thought, oh, that really illustrates a point in the Dharma. He thought that I should share that with Sharon Salzberg, because that would really be aligned with how she teaches. And then he thought, no, that happened to me. I'm not going to share that with her, so I'm going to keep it. And then he went back and forth and back and forth. And finally, when next time he saw Sharon, he just laughed and told her the whole story about what happened and his whole back and forth and gifted her with this Dharma story so she could use it in her Dharma talks. We so often get back so much from giving. And a couple of examples. I know Anne has participated in this program. I was just thinking if anybody else had, nobody here. I used to, it's still continuing without me, but I used to go to visit, to meditate in prisons. In a prison, we meditated with inmates in several different prisons over the course of years, and very often, you know, we'd go in the evening, and very often it would be at the end of the day, and I would be just really feeling like the last thing I want to do is get in the car, and drive to Laval, and especially in the winter, and then we would arrive and we would be together and we would have this shared intent of a shared generosity with the community. And then we would be with the inmates. And of course the inmates who came to these sittings, they were really wanting to use that practice to change their lives, to become more able to be with those impulses that had driven them to create suffering for themselves and for others, to allow those, to recognize and not act on those impulses. It's such a wonderful practice to teach to people who have gotten into those patterns, and they were so so grateful. Yeah, it was just so this connection of gratitude and generosity. So maybe just take a few minutes to contemplate. You know, the question that I asked earlier in the talk, who has loved me? Who has just for being who I am? Who has supported me? Who has seen me? and helped me step forth in this life to more skillful, more conscious, more elevated ways of being. Who am I grateful for? And how has that planted seeds in me, which have borne fruits of generosity? Thank you for your attention. So it's time for walking meditation. I'm just going to record this because I can't turn it off. It's time for walking meditation. So I think everybody has done walking meditation because nobody stayed back before. So I invite you to explore. Walking meditation can be done in different ways. One way, which is very supportive in the beginning of a retreat, can be to have a structured practice in which just walking back and forth, feeling especially the touch of the feet on the earth, the movements of the body, the legs lifting and moving and placing, and the sensations in the body as you walk. So that can be a really helpful way to collect the mind, to give this kind of framework of, you take about 20 paces, 25 paces, you might like between two trees or two rocks or whatever demarcations you use, and just go back and forth, walking and then turning around, pausing, feeling yourself standing on the earth, and then beginning again. And so I encourage you to do that at least, you know, a few times during walking period. You can maybe you want to walk at a normal pace to begin, or and then gradually, as your if your attention becomes more collected, you might slow down, become more precise in how you experience each moment of, you know, of your placing your heel and then placing the foot and so on. So you could explore that, play with that, be light about it. It doesn't, you know, again, perfectionist minds don't, it's not helpful. And then other ways are just to walk, you know, to walk around, to have, you know, but if we're not careful, because we do walking in our daily lives, it tends to activate the mind, right? So we walk and we think, we walk and we plan, we walk and we think about, well, what are we going to do next, or where are we going, or, you know. So that's why it's helpful to kind of help the mind settle with a more structured practice, and then to walk and then just bring that quality of mindfulness of body to just an ordinary walking. And then later, maybe tomorrow, I'll give some other suggestions for how to incorporate, you know, more of the senses into our walking practice, which can be really helpful also to bring that into daily life. So enjoy your walking. Then you'll come back and Bibiana will be guiding the meditation at 3:45. And then there'll be another walking practice before supper.